But who or what is Mara? I've described the episode as it's depicted in Buddhist art, and it's time we gave more attention to its significance, to the significance of this episode. Even though the symbolic terms in which the episode is described do communicate their own message. If we do not understand what Mara represents, we will not be able to understand the true significance of the Buddha's Mara Vijaya, his victory over Mara. Who or what then is Mara? The word itself, the word Mara, means killing, destroying. It means bringing death. It means pestilence. Mara is therefore the principle of destruction in the widest sense. And this principle is sometimes personified, sometimes not. And thus it comes about that some texts, some Buddhist texts, mention four Maras. As though it wasn't bad enough to have one, they mention four Maras. And these are Machu Mara, Kandha Mara, Kilesa Mara, and Devaputta Mara. So let's look at each of them in turn. And incidentally, I'm using the Pali rather than the Sanskrit terms for all four Maras. So first of all, briefly, Machu Mara. Here, Mara simply means death or destruction. Death, of course, is usually very unwelcome to people. Sometimes they're very surprised when it comes, even though they should have known that it was coming all the time. And because death is so unwelcome to people, they therefore regard it as an evil. But in itself, death is neither good nor evil. Death is just a fact of existence that has to be recognized. And that is what Machu Mara represents. Secondly, rather more metaphysically, there's Kandha Mara. And this Mara represents a sort of extension of the first, that is to say, an extension of Machu Mara. Because death is not just an abstraction. Death is not just a word. Death is a concrete reality. Death means that there are things which die, things which are destroyed. And these things, these beings which die, which are destroyed, between them constitute a world. In other words, there is a world which is, so to speak, in the power of death, under the sway of death. And this is the world of what are called the Khandhas, or skandhas in Sanskrit. These khandhas, or aggregates, as the word means, are five in number. There's first of all rupa, or material form, vedana, or feeling, saññā, or perception, saṅkhāra, or volition, and vijñāna, or consciousness. And these five are, of course, very well known. If you know anything at all about Buddhism, you'll be familiar with them. I've spoken about them, written about them on many occasions, so I'll say nothing about them now. But between them, these five khandhas represent the whole of what is called conditioned existence, the whole of mundane existence, the whole of relative reality, as we may call it, or in more traditional terms, the whole of the samsara, that samsara which is represented pictorially in the Tibetan Wheel of Life. So that is what Kandha Mara represents. And then thirdly, Kilesa Mara. Kilesa comes from a root meaning to adhere to stick to, and it's cognate with the word for slime. Kilesa means stain, soil, or impurity. And in a moral sense, an ethical sense, it means depravity, lust, passion. And broadly speaking, Kilesa corresponds to what is otherwise called akusala citta or akusala cittani or unskillful mental states. And the five principal kilesas or defilements, as they're generally called in English, are generally enumerated as craving, aversion, ignorance, conceit, and distraction. The first three of these, that is to say, craving, aversion, and ignorance, correspond to the three akusala mulas, or roots of unskill, which are represented, as most of you know, by the cock, the snake, and the pig that we see at the very center of the Tibetan Wheel of Life. It's these three that keep the wheel turning. In other words, it is because our minds are dominated by the kilesas, by the defilements, that we are reborn within the samsara. That is to say, are reborn in the world of conditioned existence, the world that is under the sway of death. So this is kilesa mara. This is what kilesa mara represents. And then deva putta mara. Deva means God, with a small g, and putta means son. So deva putta means son of a god, which is to say, simply, a god, just as son of man means a man. So deva putta mara, therefore, is mara as an actually existing being or person. That is, of course, the being who appears in the episode of the Buddha's Mara Vijaya, or victory over Mara. Sometimes Deva Buddha Mara is regarded as being simply a personification of the kilesas or defilements. But Deva Buddha Mara cannot in fact be reduced to the kilesas or defilements. He is, of course, dominated by the defilements, just as most beings within the samsara are. But at the same time, he has his own being and position in the universe. He has his own place in what we may call Buddhist mythology. We mustn't forget that Buddhism sees the universe as consisting of various planes, various worlds. And these planes or worlds are the objective counterparts, even perhaps the objective correlatives of mental states. Both positive and negative. Just as there is a world of human beings, according to Buddhist mythology or cosmology, there's also a world of animals, a world of gods, a world of demons, and so on. And Mara belongs to one of these worlds, one of the lower heaven worlds, not a very high world. In fact, quite a low one. But low though it is, Mara rules over this world, or if you like, this lower heaven. Indeed, he rules over all the worlds belonging to what is called the Kama Loka, or realm of sensuous desire, which includes our own human world. In a wider sense, of course, Mara rules over the whole universe, the whole of conditioned existence, because this is subject to death, which Mara primarily represents. But he rules particularly over the Kama Loka, or realm of sensuous desire. So why is this? In order to understand the matter, we must realize that above the realm of sensuous desire, there is the Rupaloka, or realm of archetypal form. And this realm corresponds to the various states, that is to say, mental states, of higher meditative consciousness. From these states, from the Rupaloka, it is possible to gain enlightenment, to gain nirvana, which it is not possible to do from the Kama Loka. Mara, therefore, is particularly anxious to stop people reaching the Rupa Loka. He's particularly anxious to stop them escaping from the Kama Loka. And this is why Mara, with the help of his forces and his daughters, tries to interrupt the Buddha's meditation beneath the Bodhi tree. Perhaps sometimes he tries to interrupt your meditation. perhaps that little distraction that arises in your mind, perhaps even that little tickling sensation that you feel that distracts you, is Mara. That's what we're sometimes taught. It's Mara at work. So beware of Mara. But perhaps I've said enough about Mara. So let us return to the Buddha's Mara Vijaya, his victory over Mara. As I said a little while ago, we cannot really understand the significance of this victory over Mara, unless we understand what it was the Buddha was victorious over. And now we're in a better position to do this. Let me remind you that there are four Maras: Machu Mara, Kanda Mara, Kilesa Mara, and Devabhuta Mara. And the Buddha overcame all four of them. And his victory was therefore a fourfold victory. So let us look at this in greater detail. Let us see how the Buddha overcame each one of them, each one of the Maras, specifically, or if you like, individually.